How about if each of you just tell the story of your first dive, everything, as much detail as you want to go into, from looking down to the water, the descent, what your tasks were, what it was like.
Well, of course, the task, as always, is to bring up samples. Pictures are wonderful, too. I brought a little Mykonos macro camera with me, and for us, it was the very first dive. And I remember we went down the anchor at that time. We thought we set the anchor, and you'd go over the side, and I remember it was just crystal blue. It was very so blue, I couldn't believe it could be that blue because we're used to low visibility areas. And we'd go down this anchor line in the blue, and it just went off into nothing. You could see nothing. It just disappeared. And as we went down the line there, it would start getting darker and darker and darker. And the further down you go, the sounds of the bubbles change. And at first they go boom, boom, like they do. Boom, boom. And as you get further down, they start getting higher in pitch. Broop, broop, broop. And then we get into the dark area. Now you don't know where the bottom is. You look up, you can't really see the top, and you're in it now. And I remember thinking, where's the bottom? Where's the top? And then we just kept going down, and eventually you'd come to where you could see the bottom. Maybe it was 60, 80 feet below you, but the reflection of whatever light was left would shine off the sand at the bottom, and things would get more illuminated. So we started going further down, and all of a sudden we noticed that the anchor was floating freely, and it was not anchored at all, and it was just going further down into the blue, and it was, if we didn't do something now, it was never ever going to get done. So it was at that time I just decided let's just go for it, and I went as fast as I could to get to the bottom, and it was, the narcosis was just really, really screaming at that point in time, and basically I just went down. And it was 205. I remember getting down to the bottom. I don't know why I had the wherewithal to look at my depth gauge, but I looked at my depth gauge and it was 205 feet. So I knew that this was much further down than we needed or wanted to go. So I went down as fast as I can, shoveled sediment or samples, as we would call them, into my bag, reached over, snapped a picture, and then got out of there as fast as I possibly can, because now we're in free water. There is no anchor line. We're just coming up free, and we had to deal with that thought process going up. There are no little T-bars with scuba tanks on them for decompressions. You had to somehow, in the rough seas, take care of yourself. So you were totally, totally on your own. And from knowing this, from the time you were going to leave the bottom, knowing there was no rope, that's when you, things in your head really start to go. And when you're narked out, things are always intensified. And I'm always asked, more questions have been asked of me on what is this nitrogen narcosis? How does it feel? And what does it mean? And all I can say about narcosis is it's predictable because everybody gets it. Everybody gets narked. Maybe at different times and different days it's worse than the other, but it's always there. And everybody knows it's going to be there. So how do you prepare for something like that? In my book, you have to prepare. You have to know exactly what you're going to do, so you don't have to make any decisions and just do it. Now, for me, this is extremely simple. Get in the water, go down, take picture, scoop, come up. You know, just as simple as you possibly can get. Now, the real heroes are the guys, the photographers, because the photographers, of course, who make the beautiful hall here beautiful for people to come in with all the pictures, they have the same thing that I had. But now how do they plan for their dive with all these unknowns going on? They got to position the strobes, shutter speeds, aperture, all these decisions that you have to make on the fly at the same time you're all narked out. So these are the people that had it harder than anybody, and they're the people who made the sanctuary alive. So they're, to me, the photographers are the heroes.
Thank you, Tom.
You're welcome.
That's very nice of you. I guess I'll have to pay you. No. I remember it similar to Tom, but different as well. We had attempted to get the anchor hooked, and as has been discussed since then many times, hooking the anchor in exactly the right spot is challenging, even when you roughly know what you're doing. And we tried to get the anchor hooked, but perhaps it wasn't a big enough anchor, or perhaps it didn't get in the crevice that was supposed to. Perhaps it was on the downcurrent side of the ridge rather than the upcurrent side of the ridge, so it wouldn't catch on anything. But we had actually dropped the anchor more than once before this, trying to get it, and it had drifted. Mm-hmm. This time, it had been dropped, and as far as we could tell with our, you know, extensive navigation equipment, it wasn't moving. But we didn't know. So we assumed the anchor was supposed to be at 150 or shallower when the dive plan was made. And I agree with Tom that my first impression was it was really clear and really blue and really beautiful. And when you've been in the water a lot and seen really nasty conditions, this was just pretty wonderful. And I thought this is going to be a really cool dive because we're going to get to see all this stuff on the bottom that we've heard about. And as we went down and didn't see the bottom coming up, that started to concern me. But once you start getting to 100 feet is when the narcosis begins, and it kind of sneaks up on you. And we just kept going down because we knew the bottom was at 150 feet because that's where we'd put the anchor. When we realized that we were looking at sandy bottom rather than rocky bottom covered with lots of life and small, you know, fish that we assumed were there, we didn't know at the time. It was like, this doesn't look like we expected it to. And I remember looking at my depth gauge and it said 180, which was deeper than the whole dive plan was supposed to be. Except that, you know, as Tom mentioned, the anchor appeared to be freely bouncing along the bottom and not catching on anything. And it was going from shallower water to deeper water. It obviously had been on a ridge or nearby. We didn't see it, but it was sloping up in the upcurrent direction, so it was getting deeper. And much as Tom did, there was a decision point of, you know, we knew what was how much everybody was counting on this dive happening at all, because we were about to give up. It was becoming a real problem for money, resources, and with zero to show for it. And we had been to 180 or 190 feet before, and we knew that we probably could function and that we had enough air being the problem. So it was clear enough, the bottom was right there, you could almost touch it, but it was 20 feet lower. And so we made probably the right decision for the sanctuary, but the wrong decision for ourselves, and went down and decided to do it quickly, and, you know, real quickly. And Tom, in, you know, described about 1 minute of activity on the bottom that he was involved in, and John next to him was doing roughly the same thing but without the camera. He was collecting sediment as well, as I remember. And I believe I had a camera and was taking pictures of them, though I don't know whether I actually took any pictures, because what I found is this was the day that narcosis affected me more than I had it affect me in the past. So it started to affect my vision. You know, it wasn't just thought processes, it started to affect my vision. And as, you know, I've mentioned before and we've talked about before, I decided that I'd rather have those problems on the surface than at the bottom. Because like I said earlier, also, I wanted to become old and cantankerous, and I'm making progress on both of those things. Mm-hmm. So I actually decided, not really consciously but automatically, to start ascending. And since we were away from the anchor and away from the line, it was straight up. The water was clear. We had a clear day. There was no fog. So getting to the surface was the priority. But the tunnel vision continued to close down until I was able to get, you know, much higher But meanwhile, I had left Tom and John, and we weren't attached to each other any longer. We were no longer a dive team. We were dive individuals and didn't know what was going on with anybody else. So the reality of the fact is I made it to the surface very quickly. Fortunately, we're down a short enough amount of time so that the risk of bends was minimal, though probably not insignificant, and managed to exhale so I didn't get an embolism. And as I'm told, came to the surface quite rapidly. It was important to me. But still, I don't remember actually becoming aware of what was going on clearly until probably a few minutes after reaching the surface. And then it kind of hit me as, where's Tom? And where's John? And that became my focus, because I was at the surface and I was not feeling, I didn't have any problems except that I'd got there quickly out of control. And that became, at that point in time, you know, here's two people I had spent many years with doing many things with, and I thought, my gosh, you know, I survived this and they didn't. It really bothered me for a few minutes until we figured out that everybody had gotten up. But we came up in different places, and everybody on the surface did their job to come and pick us up and take care of us and find us.